liberty. Then we shall open the meeting up for those who wish or feel the need to share, ask questions about steps, recovery, or what they heard in this meeting. Newcomers, we encourage you to please participate. Please do share if you have used or drank in the last 24 hours. This is a large room, so please speak loud enough for the entire group to hear. And today, it's my honor to turn it over to Carol Ann.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's my honor to be here. And it's my honor to be here with Sam, who's celebrating 30 years. Geez, I don't know. I got to speak really fast. Okay, I didn't have a voice when I woke up this morning, so I got hot water. I couldn't put honey in the thermos. Okay. Recently, this guy died in Pagosa Springs. And I thought it was rather odd because he was a guy that I had gone to junior high, middle school, with, and high school. And it said, donate, all donations are to be made to AA. I thought, holy whatever. He turned out to be an alcoholic. And I would go to parties at his house, and I thought I was the only one drinking all the drinks that the kids would line up on the mantle. So we never know who around us becomes an addict or an alcoholic. It was pretty amazing. So anyway, you got that whole part of my life. One paragraph. From there, I realized I couldn't drink. So I was 22, and I met this guy. He had a coffee house, and he had all the really good blues players there, and we became sleepy best friends, as you call us. And he turned me on to, I'd never even smoked dope, as in weed, and I'd never done anything else, and he turned me on to LSD. And this was in the era when it was legal Swiss. And I quit school the next day. Yeah, I mean, what else is there to do? I was off and running. And I did try and go back to school, and I could never finish because that wasn't my journey that night. And so... what do I do with the next 17 years? They were heaven, they were hell. I was part of a family business, and hi, Jesse. Good to see you. I was part of a family business. We were downtown. We had an antique store. We sold antiques. We put together a glass factory, and we built glass. And we owned property downtown. It was amazing. Really good property. And a guy came down from Canada, and he said to my brother-in-laws, my twin brother-in-laws who were part of the business, that if they took, he wanted to be the Tiffany of Canada. Okay, so sorry to see all of you guys. I'm trying to keep close to Rob. So that if all the equipment and all the employees and all the patents went to Canada with him, that they would get rich. And I went from living in a house on 17th Avenue Parkway to being homeless. And at that point, I had two young children, an infant that was 6 months, and my fourth child hadn't been born yet. And we were homelessness. I became bald. I was trying to nurse the baby, and I had been, I was into, you know, wine for lunch, and I smoked all day, and it wasn't cigarettes. So anyway, in order to have a home again, we were living at 4903 Lowell, which is when we finally got a place. It's a storefront next to there was a biker bar there. Mm-hmm. Was that yours?
No, I lived there too.
At 4903?
Yeah, Lowell, 50th and Lowell. Yeah.
The holes, did you have the holes in the walls from the
we
pool cues?
Upstairs.
Oh.
Yeah, upstairs.
Okay. Anyway, the bikers would put pool cues through. And I got really angry. I knew this would happen. So anyway, pool cues, you know, it's like you're an animal in a cage. You walk by and you're on it. It wasn't, it had no tub, we had no nothing. So I started just grabbing them and going, sticking the pieces of pool cues back through the holes in the walls. And bikers don't like that. And first they were nice enough to just pee through the keyhole. And then it got a little worse. Anyway, we were evicted from there. It was like, before that, we had a few pieces of equipment to sell. So when we sold them, John, my husband, decided he wanted to rent a place in Aspen. It is not something you do when you're homeless. So we moved there, and we were evicted and evicted and evicted, but I had a dear friend who knew where all the best parties were, and we lived in a cedar log home, and it had a lot of creosote in the chimney, and I left my children, and I would go party at night. The house could have burned down. It was tinder to begin with. And when I think back on it, it wasn't too good. So anyway, from there we came back, and that's when we moved on the Lowell Boulevard. And no stove, no nothing. I had an electric skillet. I called it the Lowell Boulevard Special, and I could cook eggs, celery, onions. And eventually a friend said, okay, if you want to get out of here and you want to do something really good, I've got this really nice cocaine, and if you sell it, you can make enough money to move into a real house. What a great idea. So I wasn't a very good salesperson. In fact, people told me we didn't think you would cut it like that. I'm sorry. So we moved into a house, and the fourth child was born. And then after my fourth child was born, things began to fall apart again because they weren't ever together. And we had to move into another house. Anyway, we moved into the house that I'm still in now. It's a Don Y thing. The house has been in and out of foreclosure time and time and time again. And I don't know how I'm still there. Now I can be there and the house is paid for. But so we moved into this house, and it was Christmas time, and I went down to put some wash in the washer, and the washer went on spin, and this bag fell out of the ceiling. It was a big paper King Supers bag. I looked inside, and it was full of cocaine. This is a true story. It's full of cocaine. Little baggies, big baggies. John at the time had moved out, and he was living in the Barclay or the Windsor or one of those high rises, and he had a bodyguard, and he was buying and selling, and this at the time, I used to say this guy looked like Refrigerator Perry. He was a big bodyguard. And so this bag's there. I look inside. I can't believe, you know, like manna from heaven or something. So I'm not going to tell anybody about it. My friend Gail wants to come over and join me, and she's going to bring wild turkey.
Oh,
excuse me, Gail. We're no longer friends. This bag, I didn't realize it, but there was a guy that had lived in the apartment that was downstairs at the time. It's an apartment again, wasn't for a long time, was killed in a bar fight. And this was his bag. I thought it was John's, and I thought, oh God, Refrigerator Perry's gonna do me in. But it didn't work out that way. There was enough cocaine for me to stay high from Christmas to next August.
Jesus.
I could do it. I did it day and night. If my children were watching TV, I would go along the wall because I didn't want them to see me. I could do an eight ball by myself at night. That got scary.
Yeah.
And it was all over in August. And I was pretty glad. And by that time, I'd go to AA meetings, but they wouldn't let me talk. Because, is your powder wet or dry? So, and I didn't have what they wanted. So, I was really frustrated. So, I went along and tried to go to their meetings, and I got an Al-Anon sponsor because I thought, this is John's problem, it's not mine, poor guy. So, all of a sudden, it was Thanksgiving, and I had met this man at an Al-Anon meeting. His name was Michael. He was the bane of my existence. And he was going to get me sober. He was a year sober, and he moved in. And I didn't have, I was a mess. And he brought his four kids and my four kids. God. And it was Thanksgiving. And my cousin's a musician. Very dear person, and he was playing at the Tropicana, and it was Thanksgiving, which is the 28th of November, 1983. Okay, he's playing at the Tropicana, and I know that the band's gonna have some really good stuff in the green room. I wanna go try one more time because I think I can do it like a lady. So I leave that man that I met in an Al-Anon meeting, my mother, who had never met him, and eight children, and an uncooked turkey. And I said, adios, pals, I'm going to Las Vegas. So I went to use one more time, see if I could do it right. So I get to Las Vegas. And I realize what I've done, and I am terrified. Terrified. I have to go back and face 10 people. My mother had never even met this guy. So I'm sitting in the green room. Is today the 28th? 29th. Oh, this is the day, this is the real day of terror. 42 years ago, really. So that was yesterday. So, hold on. Souvenirs of a lifetime. So I'm sitting in the green room, and they're all going, oh man, this is good stuff. Between sets. And I'm going, nothing's happening. I can't get high. I just destroyed my life, and nothing's happening. It ended with a whimper and not with a bang. I was done. I couldn't do any more, and I came back to Denver, and I had to look at all of them. So So, Mercy Hospital. So, the guy I was living with, incidentally, I'll get to this later, but I just want to tell you, the relationship ended up when he molested my daughters and got 18 years in prison, and I lost my kids for 10 years. That's part of this story. I said the wrong thing in a courtroom. I said, oh, well, we can all get together and come home and heal together. And the judge said, take the kids away from this one. So then I lost my kids, too. I was 13 years sober when that happened, though. I'll get to that. So anyway, we go to, this guy goes to take a wet one to Mercy Hospital, which was a hospital at the time in Denver. And he says, there's a note that they're having a cocaine meeting in the sunroom. He said, you should go check this out. Okay. So I went and checked it out. And I liked the people sitting in the sunroom, but I wasn't part of the group, so they told me to leave. But I knew enough about the big book that we went to a restaurant on Saturday morning. That's the beginning of this meeting, incidentally. On Saturday morning, and it was on like 16th and Arapaho. And we sat there, and the guy would vacuum under our feet, and a couple of us, several of us would from the hospital, and I would sit in the booth, and they kicked us out of there. And then what happened was, I'm just trying to arrange this. So anyway, one of the guys said, hey, my therapist was named Donna Roberts, and Donna had a place called Nirvana Counseling at 1740 Williams. She said she'd rent us a room. Oh, that's cool. So, well, what are we going to do? Well, this is a meeting. No, it's the first meeting. I guess it's meeting number one, and it's at Nirvana Counseling. Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, because my kids did dance, and they were out by 10, and we could meet. So we go there, and for the first 2 years, people just came and people went, people came and people went. And all of a sudden, this guy shows up in November of 85. I look at him and I think, Don, you're never going to get it. Your eyeballs are deuce figure eights. You can't read. What in the hell is wrong with you? And I thought, I'll be here alone forever. It was Don Y. Oh, thank God he stayed. So that was November of 85. November 1st, I think, is his clean date. Oh, he was a godsend. Finally, there was someone there who was had nowhere else to go either and was going to stay and help put this thing together. We didn't know we were putting anything together. It took another, I don't know how long, before we moved to the next bigger room. And then eventually we moved into the basement, and it was a smoke-a-thon down there. You know, part the cigarette smoke. And that's how this meeting and this fellowship got started. From there, thank you. I got a show and tell for you guys. I'm going to pass things around. John moved on to Las Vegas. He remarried, and I once got a $99 check. he had won $28,000. I found out, this is funny, when he died, he doesn't mind. There was a, you know, how that when you win the money in Vegas and they give you that big cardboard thing, he was back in Denver, it was behind his dresser. And my daughters pulled it out. I went, oh, that's when I got the $99 check. That's $28,000. So anyway, I had to figure out how to make a living, what to do. So I went back to school and I learned graphics and camera work and what have you, and I had always been a writer and a photographer and so on. So I decided I'd put out a newspaper. So I've got a few copies here. They're pretty yellow. It's called the 12 Step Times. And I did it for 5 years. I'll pass copies around. And I went to World Services, in AA World Services. I had everything approved, so I made sure I did it all right. And this is what I did from year 5 to 10 of my sobriety. So I'll just, if you guys want to separate them out or look at them or what have you. This is my show and tell for you. There was a lot going on. Yeah, take a few. I want to go into the late 80s, the early 90s. There was a whole bunch of stuff going on at the time. And there was a lady that used to be here by the name of Shelley Marshall. Wait, I got to get a Kleenex here. Hold on, I'm prepared. And she did NA, and she wrote a book called Teenage Addicts Can Recover. And they wanted to get AA going in Russia. So it was still the Soviet, as the Eastern Bloc fell. So she became part of this, and she took me, she brought me pieces of her journey when she went to Eastern Europe. And, I forgot to tell you, this is me. My Al-Anon sponsor asked what it looked like to use, and this was made into the first poster, 1984, at 1740 William Street. So, just wanted to let you know. Okay, so. There's a bigger picture here, too, and that is when Shelley went to Eastern Europe, Chernobyl had just happened, and they were worried that they were all eating radioactive vegetables. And she went and did things. She went and helped bring AA there, and she brought me presents back. And I've never been able to show them, so I'd really like to. These are these nesting things. And these are what, before there was the 12 steps in Russia, these were like the nesting little babushkas. And they had the addicts and the alcoholics stand up and make things. It was the only way they knew to keep them from drinking again. And they weigh nothing. Here, I'll pass some over here. I mean, they are so light. These are like acts of desperation. You can guess what they say, coffee, flour, sugar. while she was there, she snuck, this is how they got AA going. These are pamphlets. They took the grapevine and they made it into pamphlets that they sewed into suitcases. And she traveled with these sewed into her suitcases, and they started meetings. I mean, it's... And she would bring me back this stuff. I mean, it's all just sat on shelves at home. Let me see what else I brought. I got more. I'll keep that for right now. So, pardon?
Is there a rabbit in there?
Yeah, I need my hot water again. The little fellowship here grew, and the fellowships elsewhere grew. It was like a time where things just blossomed, and things happened, and There was a lot going on. It ended for us when the new medical system came in 1994, and that's when I had to close the newspaper because I no longer had advertisers. So, and then I had to figure out what to do. So I couldn't quite figure it out. Anyway, about that time, my daughter, who had been molested by this man, who incidentally, he's a good lesson in this, he never did the steps. He didn't do any of the work. He rode the coattails of sometimes going to meetings and then not going to meetings. If there's an illustration of that, this man is it. He's passed since. My daughter called. I was working nights then. I would have liked to have done more and been more with the fellowship, but I was working. I worked, you know, two jobs. I worked under the table. I did meetings. I did everything I could, but there was a lot of things I, you know, that I would have liked to have done on a bigger scale. I never could, but that's, I'm here today and I'm really glad. So anyway, my daughter called the cops because she was supposed to be asleep. She was on the phone. He reached over to grab the phone. It triggered her. And she had the boyfriend call the cops. When I got home, the cops were in the driveway, and it was the end of that life as I knew it. So anyway, then I was 13 years sober. And I went to the Promises that Thanksgiving. And we met outside on the steps. And I was gone. I said to myself, if I never get my kids back again, I still have to stay sober. And the reason I did is just to let them know that that's who I was. And so I did it not because of any reason, good reason. And I during that period of time, I will say I tried to disappear myself different ways, and it passively, you know, smash the car, do this, do that, do this, do that. And thank God none of it worked. And I'm still here, and I'm still sober. So at that point, there was a woman who became my spiritual advisor, my life. She died at the age of 97 in 2007, and I was with her for 18 years. And I worked the steps with her. I loved her. She had a column there on the top of page 3. She was a mystic, and she hated humans. And I was there by default. She tried to get rid of me many times. And it didn't work. It didn't work. So I'm now doing a book that details my life with her, and we put together aphorisms. And they parallel what we learn here. And then when she died, I like the kids were back, and I'm smooth sailing. I'm retired. I got this. I've been given the keys to the kingdom. I've been given the keys to a bunch of kingdoms. I mean, I my life is so full. I've now got 8 grandchildren. 3 are in Denver. 5 are elsewhere. I have a life beyond anything I ever imagined. I don't know. I can't think of anything else. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all for being here.